power hungry bureaucrats. The federal government already owns about 34% of the total land area of the nation. This vast public domain, instead of producing revenue, is an expense to taxpayers. Yet the land hunger of federal bureaucrats grows with each new tract seized and added to government holdings. This speeds the concentration of power in Washington, which is a prerequisite step toward communizing America. When the government controls all land, permitting it to be used only within conformity to the taste of the Washington bureaucracy, we will have national monolithic ugliness standardized by government planning. All federal land not absolutely necessary for constitutional federal use should be sold and the proceeds applied to the national debt to reduce the burden being piled up for future generations. That is a summary of my report on power-hungry bureaucrats. The full report after a message from my sponsor. In 1950, Wilford Metcalf, a disabled World War II veteran with 3.5 years combat service in Europe, bought 86 acres of Tennessee mountain land. In 1965, the U.S. Forest Service said Metcalf owned only 31 acres, that the other 55 belonged to government because they are part of the Cherokee National Forest. Asserting that Metcalf owed $1,717.52 for timber he had cut on land claimed by the government, the Forest Service submitted the case to the Department of Justice for prosecution. U.S. Representative James Quillen from Tennessee said, quote, "It is strange that at the same time the federal government is spending $760 a month each putting girls up in plush hotels in St. Petersburg, Florida, and Los Angeles in the name of fighting poverty, they are prosecuting a disabled veteran with a wife and 4 children who is guilty only of trying to wrest a living from his land," end quote. Public and congressional interest in the Metcalf case prompted the Forest Service to make another survey. On second survey, the service discovered that Metcalf owned all 86 acres of the farm he had bought, had not been guilty of trespass upon government land, and did not owe the $1,717.52. Official hunger for private land to add to the public domain has produced many strange cases. In June 1965, a meeting of the Western Mining Council was held in California to protest U.S. Forest Service confiscation of a 5-acre tract where a mill site has been located along Highway 140 since 1927. The mill site serves 2 gold mines. The Forest Service wants to eliminate this privately owned facility, essential to the production of gold from 2 mines, at a time when America's monetary gold reserve is desperately low, so that a government campground for tourists can be established on the 5-acre tract. A Forest Service official admits that there are many other suitable tracts for a campsite along Highway 140, but says the service wants this particular tract and is going to take it, asserting that the Forest Service has the power to confiscate any private land for public recreational purposes. During February 1962, the Interior Department tried to seize 10,000 acres of property in Indiana to establish the Splunge Bird Refuge. This would have forced 86 farm families to vacate some of Indiana's richest farmland. Landowners organized and resisted, arguing that there was no necessity for the refuge, that its establishment would cause a loss of $1 million a year in agricultural production and loss of local tax revenues. Government officials said, "We need some place for the birds to get together with the people." The federal government already owns 772 million acres of land, about 34% of the total land area of the nation. Instead of producing revenue, more than one-third of all land in the nation is an expense to taxpayers. Some consequences of this condition are indicated by the California Mining Journal. Quote, "The federal government owns and controls over 50% of the land in California, and the federal agencies devote most of their energy to the accumulation of more land. The government pays no taxes on this land, and as a result, the counties find it difficult to raise enough money for legitimate needs. Communities surrounded by federal land are unable to expand, and industry is driven from the area. Almost every county in California, which is labeled a depressed area, is surrounded by huge areas of federally owned land," end quote. National policy with regard to the public domain is now doing the exact opposite of what was originally intended. When American independence was declared, some of the original 13 states claimed jurisdiction over unsettled western lands, and many claims overlapped. This potential breeder of war and disunion was eliminated when the states ceded their claim to western territories to the federal government. The federal government, in turn, was pledged to use the territories for the good of all states, and in due time, to admit western territories as new states. It was not intended that the federal government would retain ownership of these lands, but would rather administer them until they could be disposed of to individuals and to new state governments. Originally, land in the public domain was disposed of by sale to provide revenue for the federal government. Beginning in the 1830s, however, the federal government began to give away the public lands to serve various economic and social purposes. Another change became apparent in the late 1920s and early 1930s. Instead of disposing of public land so that it could be developed by private individuals under the political authority of state and local governments, the federal bureaucracy began holding on to the public domain, converting it into a mammoth land management system, administered and policed from Washington. In 1946, a new policy was initiated. Instead of disposing of the public land or merely holding on to what it already had, the federal government began accumulating more land by purchase or outright seizure. Propaganda about the need for the federal government to preserve the magnificence of unspoiled nature for the future generations has emotional appeal but is not grounded in truth or logic. If you set aside wilderness areas that are accessible only to a favored few who can afford expensive safaris into them, what becomes of your argument that you're preserving these beauty spots for the people? On the other hand, when an area of natural beauty is set aside as national park and then made accessible to motorized millions with handy water fountains, ready-made camping sites, and other modern conveniences, the place loses much of the beauty and grandeur and all of the soul-restoring solitude of the wilderness. The beauty of many famous spots of natural grandeur has been spoiled by the trampling, buffeting, scratching, and littering of tourists who feel no obligation to care for something that belongs to nobody but is the property of everybody. Since the most effective work in preservation of historical sites and scenes of natural beauty has been accomplished by private effort, it is hardly conceivable that government action would ever be necessary in this field. But if it ever should be, the responsibility should rest with state and local governments. There is no valid reason why Washington bureaucrats should plan and control parks and other recreational areas for the people. There are many reasons why they should not have such power. The most important reason being that concentration of power in Washington is a prerequisite step toward communizing America. U.S. Senator Millward Simpson, speaking of Grand Teton National Park in Wyoming, says, quote, "They built a Coney Island in the world's most beautiful country. The power-hungry bureaucrats have no great love for Mother Nature. They want only one thing, more and more property, your property and mine, and they don't care how they get it," end quote. This empire building of power-hungry bureaucrats is implementing the communist plan for conquest of the United States. In 1932, William Z. Foster, then national chairman of the Communist Party, restated point one of the Communist Manifesto in terms specifically applicable to the United States. Foster said, quote, "The establishment of an American Soviet government will involve the confiscation of the large landed estates in town and country, and also the whole body of forests, mineral deposits, lakes, rivers, and so on," end quote. When the government controls our land, permitting it to be used only within conformity to the taste and specifications of the Washington bureaucracy, we will have national monolithic ugliness standardized by government planning. And the planning is already in an advanced stage. Land grabbing by the federal bureaucracy fulfills point one of the Communist Manifesto. Planned use of the federal lands, together with related schemes for urban-rural planning and management by federal officials, and Supreme Court reapportionment decisions which eliminate distinctions between urban and rural representation in state legislatures, fulfills point nine of the Communist Manifesto. Quote, combination of agriculture with manufacturing industries, gradual abolition of the distinction between town and country, end quote. The people must elect a Congress of constitutionalists who will repeal the laws that are communizing our nation. The Federal Forest Service, Park Service, Bureau of Mines, Fish and Wildlife Service, and kindred federal agencies should be abolished. The Bureau of Land Management, which acquires and manages public land, should be replaced with something comparable to the old General Land Office, which was created in 1812 to dispose of public land, not to hold on to it or to acquire more. Congress should determine what lands are needed for public use by civilian and military agencies of the federal government. All federal land not absolutely necessary for legitimate constitutional federal use should be sold to private purchasers and to local and state governments if necessary. The proceeds should be applied on payment of our national debt to reduce the crushing burden we are piling up for future generations. And what can you as an individual do about all of this? You who care can help a great deal by helping distribute literature that has helped educate and arouse you. I mean, among other things, of course, the Dan Smoot Report, the printed magazine on which these broadcasts is based. The subscription rate is $10 a year. And another thing that you could do, that's a very obvious thing, if you approve of these broadcasts of mine, support the sponsor who makes the broadcast possible.